Is your business worth saving? Welcome to Business Rescue Roadmap, providing new approaches to your business, how to avoid pitfalls, and proven methods to take your business to the top. Save your business, rescue your life with your host and business coach, Stacy Tuschel.
Hello and welcome to the Business Rescue Roadmap. I am your host, Stacy Tuschel, and I'm so looking forward to today's episode. We have Ray Edwards that's going to be joining us in a minute. Ray Edwards has worked as a communications strategist and copywriter for some of the most incredible voices in leadership and business. Let me name a few to give you an idea. He's worked with Tony Robbins, Jack Canfield, and Mark Victor Hansen. They're the co-authors of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Jeff Walker, author of The Launch, and many more. Ray has also written his own books, Writing Riches, Just Getting Started, Tips for Starting, Running, and Growing Your Online Business, and Money Words, easy-to-use copywriting and marketing secrets that help you sell more. His marketing campaigns that he's written or directed have generated over an estimated $100 million in sales. Ray, I am so honored that you are here with us today. Welcome to the Business Rescue Roadmap.
Oh, thank you. It's my privilege to be here.
Did I miss anything in your bio, or is there anything else you'd like my audience to know before we dive right in?
Well, the one thing I would like them to know is I did not get to keep all the $100 million.
You know, and that is such an impressive number. And when I was reading that in your bio, I think you mentioned, you know, as amazing as that number is, unfortunately, it went into my client's pocket. So I loved your story and your background. So I would love to get into more of that as we're going through this interview as well.
Well, I'm an open book.
All right. So the first section of questions I call Commit to Win or Cut Your Losses. And in this section, we talk about, you know, the choices you've made to really commit to having that successful business. So take us back, maybe that moment I just talked about when you decided to start your business. You know, let us know, what were you thinking about when you decided, should I go for it or keep doing what I'm doing?
Well, I think like a lot of entrepreneurs, I've decided to start my business about 1,007 times. And it came down to, I was working in the radio business and I was making really good money. I had one of the best jobs in radio. I made a six-figure salary. I had 4 weeks of paid vacation. I had all the benefits, retirement package and health benefits paid for. And it was cush. I mean, it was so cush. Imagine this, the company that I worked for did not have any radio stations in the city where I worked. So I got to work out of my home and I didn't have to report to an office. And about once a week, I flew somewhere, told everybody how to do their job, and then flew back home. It was awesome. But it was also kind of draining because, you know, even if you're working remotely like that, you're always wondering how your performance is being evaluated. And I was working in an industry that was on its way out because the internet has made radio largely irrelevant in many ways, at least the ways it used to be relevant. We used to count on radio to hear new songs, and now we can hear all the new songs in our pocket for free with no commercials and no annoying DJs. So that was really tough for the radio business. And I was going to leave that and hang out my shingle as a copywriter and marketing consultant online. And my wife said, well, as soon as the income from that business matches the income from the radio business, then I will feel secure enough for us to do that. She didn't say it in exactly those words, but that was the agreement we came to because I knew that's how she felt. I was like, you know, I'm ready. I'll just quit. I'll make it work. It'll happen. Don't worry about it. But, you know, it doesn't always work that way when one is the entrepreneurial person and one is the more kind of homesteader. You got the pioneers and the homesteaders, and they usually marry each other, it turns out.
Absolutely. So you were describing my husband and I as you were talking about that.
Well, it's very common in this world that we operate in, Stacy. It happens that it typically is the pioneer type person who marries the homesteader type person. And that there's a lot of tension that comes from that. And what I discovered is over communicating and really listening to your partner very closely and validating their feelings is what's important. Not saying, oh, don't be silly. Of course it'll work. That's not the way to do it. So here's the problem though, Stacy. We got to the point that my business income from my moonlighting and part-time work actually did meet and it matched my six-figure income from the radio business. But then we decided, well, but wait, if I quit the radio job, that means we cut our income in half. So it took another 6 months before I was willing to make the leap. And the reason I made the leap was I was killing myself. I was working two full-time jobs, basically. And it just came to the point where I had to decide. And I decided that, okay, July 4th is going to be my day. Very symbolic, of course. And we just made the commitment that that was it. And we left the corporate world and we've never looked back. That was in 2005.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm glad that you're mentioning your wife, because it's so important that you're both not on the same page necessarily, because you're going to think completely different, but you have to make them feel secure. You don't ever want to make them feel uneasy about the situation. So I like that you brought that up as well.
Yeah, it's really important. And I like to think of it as, you know, like singing. When you sing, like if you ever sang in church, then you know there's different parts. You sing in different harmonies, and one person may be singing the bass part and one person may be singing the alto part. So you're singing two very different songs, really, but they're harmonized. And as long as you know your part and you're singing correctly, matching with your partner, then it works. But if you're in conflict and you don't agree on the base values and you don't communicate to one another and validate one another's feelings, then it can cause all kinds of problems.
Right. And that's a great way to describe that. Absolutely. So let's talk about looking within. Tell me some of your personal strengths that you would say allow you to really maintain a strong and successful business.
My personal strengths, probably the biggest one, is I just always believe that there's a possible way to achieve whatever we're aiming for, whatever goal we're after. Even when things go terribly wrong, I'm always the guy who's like, that's okay, we'll make it work. Well, there's a way out of this. It's just, there's that belief that there's always a way. And I think that's common for entrepreneurs. And it also gets us into trouble as entrepreneurs, because a friend of mine said, here's how I define a successful entrepreneur. That's a person who's able to make enough money to cover up their mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think having an awareness of that, you know, that it is your greatest strength and it's possibly also one of your biggest pitfalls, you need to be able to be aware of that as well. But that's one of my great strengths, I think. And then the other strength that I have is just the ability to communicate my vision to other people and get other people excited about what I'm excited about. In fact, sometimes I'm so good at that, that, you know, later I have to go back to them because they say, now, what was I excited about again? Because I don't remember.
That's funny. And now tell me, with these strengths, do you agree that sometimes those can become your weaknesses? I mean, I've noticed that a lot when somebody asks me that question, I can almost go both ways with it.
Well, yes, they can. I mean, here's the truth. These traits that we have that make us good entrepreneurs are like any other force in nature or in human psychology. They can be turned to good use or they can be turned to poor use or bad use. And so, like, you know, I was saying, I believe there's always a way. Well, if you believe there's always a way and the goal that you're after is you're running east looking for a sunset, it doesn't matter how much you believe there's a way, you're not going to find it until you turn around. And if you're really good at encouraging people and getting people excited about your mission, but your mission is flawed or it's doomed to failure from the beginning, then that can be a problem as well. And not only that, but I'm not only good at talking other people into doing stuff, I'm good at talking myself into doing stuff. So I can get myself all fired up and excited about something that maybe is not a great idea. So what I have learned to do, and I don't want to come off sounding like I know everything, I'm all wise and all knowing, and I got this all figured out, because I did it just like everybody else. And I'm still doing it this way. I make mistakes and I usually eventually learn from my mistakes. And so I've learned to surround myself with people who are not like me, people who are, you know, are glass half empty kind of people. And you have to be careful about that too. You have to let them speak up in the proper context. They don't belong in a brainstorming meeting, for instance, or that glass half empty attitude doesn't belong in a brainstorming meeting. But there comes a point when you need somebody who sees all the obstacles and potential problems and is not the eternal optimist who can say, well, have you thought of these problems that could come up? Because if you don't have that person available, then you could run into trouble. And the same way, you need somebody on your team who is at least somewhat impervious to your persuasive powers. So you can't always talk them into agreeing with you.
Yeah. And I definitely have that person in my business right away when you're talking about this. My sister is that person who is going to keep me grounded and she'll kind of bring my ideas down a little bit, but I need her. I mean, that's probably what's really helping me create the things that I'm creating. But then you're right, when I'm really excited and I want to tell somebody a new idea, I'm probably not going to go to her first because she's going to be my devil's advocate. So I 100% agree with you when you're talking about that. Now, let's transition into the section I call Money Really Does Matter. Many entrepreneurs, we learn the hard way and we make, you know, several financial mistakes and we don't really know how to manage our finances. So looking back, what was one financial mistake that you made in your business and how can you share with us how you've grown from that experience?
I only get one?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so one was not having a budget for the business from the very beginning. And I just basically ran the business out of the checking account. And I had nobody that I was accountable to. And so it was just, if I had money to do a certain ad campaign or buy a piece of software or make an investment in going to a live training event or something like that, I just did it. And that's really not a great way to run a business. You need to, as Dave Ramsey says, you need to name every dollar, spend it on paper before the month arrives. And that way you're spending strategically and not just episodically with the whim of the moment. So that was probably the biggest mistake that I made. And I made it for a long, long time. And then tied to that mistake was using credit cards in the early days to fund my business. And there's a mythology, Stacy, that goes around about how, you know, so-and-so entrepreneur, this great entrepreneurial success story, started her business by taking 5 credit cards and maxing them out and mortgaging her house to get started. And that sounds all romantic and, you know, she's a billionaire now, but there's a problem with those stories, and that is they are not the norm, and they're really, they're deceptive because we only hear those stories. We don't hear the 9,999 stories of entrepreneurs who maxed out their credit cards and went bankrupt and had to go back and get a job somewhere. So I would say have a budget and don't use credit to build your business.
I love that you brought up Dave Ramsey. He was a huge, has been a huge influence on me. I found out about him pretty early on from another couple that I'm friends with. And my husband and I did his Financial Peace University the first year we were married. And what an amazing course. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or have taken it.
Yep, I've taken it.
Yeah, I mean, it is, especially with your spouse. I mean, to get on the same page, it has been, we never argue about money because we've made these agreements and we've stuck to them. So check out Dave Ramsey if you have not heard of him or heard of his Financial Peace University.
Yeah, that was, not only was that good for our financial life, it was actually one of the best things we ever did for our marriage, because for the first time in our, we've been married for over 30 years now, Lynn and I, but for the first time in those, at that time, it was like we were couple decades plus into the marriage. But we finally got on the same page about money. And we, just like you just said, we ceased having arguments about money. We understood where the other person was coming from. And we had a set of rules and guidelines so that we knew. We didn't have to ask or, you know, sneak around and figure, I got to talk her into this or she's got to talk me into it. We already know the answer because we've decided in advance.
Right. And if we ever were to come to a disagreement, we kind of go back to the basics and say, okay, how did we come to the agreement last time? You know, what did Dave talk us through? So we just kind of keep replaying that. And it's really nice to be, you know, to understand each other and to not have surprises come up when you see a credit card bill or things like that. So great resource. I'm so glad you mentioned him.
Yep. We frequently still ask the question. Now, what would Dave say about this?
Absolutely. Well, one of the biggest things we spend our money on, I see this time and time again, it's our marketing. And we know that marketing, you know, we have to do it to really have the success that we want. So people will spend a ton of money on marketing and they just kind of throw dollars into anything. So now that you've been in your business for a while and you're seeing this success, what are you doing with your marketing that keeps your business thriving and surviving?
Well, the main thing that we do with our marketing budget, we spend almost all of our marketing budget on Facebook ads and affiliate commissions. So Facebook ads are pretty self-explanatory. We pay Facebook to show our ads. And it's a great medium. It's probably the best opportunity for most entrepreneurs right now. If you sell anything online, whether it's a physical product or a digital product, it doesn't really matter. There's a way to sell it through Facebook because everybody's on Facebook and it's so easy to target exactly, dial down your message so that it's delivered exactly to the people who would be most likely to buy your product. It's very cost efficient. You can control how much money you're spending. You don't have to have a big budget. You can spend $10 a week and still make money with it. So that's where we've done most of our investment in terms of marketing dollars. And then we have an affiliate program so that we have people who recommend our products to other people, and we pay them a commission if a sale is made, and that's trackable electronically. So other than that, you know, our marketing really consists of practicing what we preach, which is direct response style marketing. We use sales copy, a very direct approach to selling our products online. And we test and track everything in our marketing funnel from top to bottom. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that people make, whether it's online or offline. You know, I told you I was in the radio business. I did that for 30 plus years. And one of the things that boggled my mind was that we had clients who would spend $30,000, $40,000 a month on radio ads, and they did not track whether those ads were being effective or not. And it was doable. You could track it. It wasn't as easy as it is now with the internet. You can track your advertising down to the penny. But even back in those days when there was no internet, you could still track the effectiveness of your ads. But people in general, businesses in general, don't track specific campaigns to specific outcomes. And that's something you've got to do. You've got to know, I invested this much money or this much time and effort, even if it was a no money deal. I invested this much time, effort, and energy into this marketing campaign. Did it work? Why did it work? And it's pretty easy at that point, once you know the answer to that question, you do more of what works and you do less of what doesn't work.
Right. And when you're talking about tracking and figuring out where that came from, I mean, when I started Facebook marketing, I was just, you know, blindly grabbing, you know, giving those targets and saying, oh, anybody that likes this page and this page. And somebody said to me, well, that's great. And if it's working, but how do you know where they're coming from? You have so many pages liked and so many different targets. So it is really You absolutely have to test specific markets to figure out where they're coming from so you can keep sticking money into that specific campaign. So
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you brought that up as well. Now, with your book, Money Words, can you give us just a brief glimpse into what kind of person, who should be looking at that book? I know it's all about copywriting and marketing secrets. So just kind of give me a brief glimpse for my audience of if this would be a good book for them.
Well, I'll do that. And what I'll say is Money Words is a good book for anybody who wants to write ads or copy or blog posts or emails that results in more sales. And having said that, I would point you actually to my new book, which probably wasn't listed in the information you got because we didn't have a publication date, I think, by the time we sent you. But my new book is called How to Write Copy That Sells. And so that's a lot more of a direct title. It's very clear what the intent of the book is. And that book is probably where I would recommend people go first. If you have a product or a service that you want to sell more of, which should cover just about everybody, then How to Write Copy That Sells is really my step-by-step breakdown of how to write sales copy and marketing campaigns exactly the same way that I write them so that you can sell more of your products or services. And I cover email marketing and email sales copy. I cover how to write for social media, how to write your blog posts in a way that's more compelling and persuasive. And then, of course, how to write the actual sales page copy that convinces people to pull out their debit card because they're not using a credit card, I hope. I hope they're using a debit card and buy your products or services.
Great. And I will put the new book in my show notes for everybody so they can find that as well.
Great.
Now, tell me, Ray, how do you define work-life balance? Does it exist? Does it exist for you? Just let me look into a little bit more of your lifestyle with the work-life balance.
Well, you know, it's funny. I hear people talk about this, and it's really popular now to say, well, there's no such thing as work-life balance. You just have one life, and you have to blend it all together. And I know that's a popular viewpoint, but I don't believe it's true. I think that, you know, we have different areas or spheres of responsibility and life important matters. And if we're not careful, they can get out of balance. I like to think of it as a wheel, and we've probably all seen this illustration before. If you draw a circle and you divide it up into like pie pieces and you put in the different areas of your life, like faith, fitness, family, finance, friends, fun, fulfillment, and you split up the pie into seven pieces, which is how I split it up. If that was a wheel, you turned it on its side, and if one of them was only halfway or a quarter of the way full or optimized to the point you'd like it to be at, and several others are all the way up to a 10, all the way out to the edge of the pie, and you turn that as a wheel, it's going to give you a really rough ride. That's how it's, because a wheel has to be perfectly round. So I think you do have to have your life balanced. And so for me, it's a continual balancing act. It's a continual, I won't say struggle, it's a continual exercise or practice where I want to make sure that I'm paying attention to all the different areas of my life. Because what happens is we get focused on our business because we have a new product coming out or a new book coming out. And so we pour in lots of extra effort into that, as we should. But then something else usually suffers. It's maybe time with our family, or perhaps it's our spiritual practice. If, you know, like for me, I need to start the day by spending time with my Creator and reading the Bible and doing those practices that keep me close to that core of my being. And if I let myself get over busy with work then and take extra time to work and leave that part out of the day out, then my life will suffer. If I leave out time with the family, time with my wife, time with my son. So I work very carefully to keep my life in balance and make sure that I'm getting plenty of time with God, time working on my physical health, exercising, making sure I'm eating the right things, time with my family, time working on and contributing to our financial picture, making money and caring for that money, stewarding it, time having fun, time spent with friends, and time working on the areas of life that provide fulfillment, you know, the parts of life that are a bigger story, a bigger picture than just ourselves or our own little insulated world. But there's other people in the world that we were created to be part of their lives and vice versa. And so I think we have a responsibility especially when we're blessed. Like, you know, Stacy, you're an entrepreneur. So you have a certain amount of freedom and you have a certain amount of financial reward that's given to you as an entrepreneur. And part of the responsibility that comes with that is being able to help other people. That's what I believe. I'm not telling you what to do, but that's my belief.
Well, and I think that's why we're all doing this. I mean, there are so many people in this type of industry where we're, you know, doing things online and we're selling products and services because we want to do that. We want to give back. We want to share what we've learned and teach others. So absolutely, I agree 100%.
Yeah, I've got a friend named Stu McLaren, and he is he's a very successful entrepreneur. He started a couple of software companies, and he works with some very well-known New York Times best-selling authors to help them build their online communities and products. And Stu does very well, and he spends so much of his time building schools in Africa and supporting teachers in Africa. He and his wife have a charity called World Teacher Aid, and that's the most important thing to those two. That's the thing that they are most devoted to. So, you know, the creation of income, they're very successful at, but that's not the reason that they do it. You know, there's nothing wrong with money. Money's not evil, but there's so many things that it cannot buy you, but there are certain things that only money can buy. And so for those things, it's very useful. And sometimes those things are the things we do for other people, like building schools or building wells where there's no clean water or helping people who are homeless or whatever is nearest and dearest to your heart. Maybe it's nothing so grandiose. Maybe it's just having the ability to take some time off and spend it visiting with your family or visiting with people at the nursing home that's near your... Something for you in your life, I know, has that draw, that magnetic pull on your heart that says, I want to do this. I want to contribute in this way because we're built that way. We're built to have a desire to do that. And if we don't do it, we end up feeling empty and we wonder, well, this is why people end up with lots of money and success and a big house and a big family. And from the outside, it looks like everything's great. And yet they're asking themselves every day, is this all? Is there nothing else? That's why they're not tapping into that fulfillment part.
Right. And I love when people, they talk about this, but it's not just about money either. I mean, if you are thinking, if you're a listener and you're saying, well, I don't have the money to give right now, a couple of things that I want to respond with is you don't have to just always give money. I mean, you can give time, and that's more valuable than anything. And then another thing too, you know, time or donations, things like that. But they always say, if you can't donate or give now, you're never going to do it later when you're even more successful. So create those habits and start now so you can continue to give and at the bigger you get as well.
Yeah, don't kid yourself by saying, well, when I make $100,000, then I'll give $10,000 to charity. But right now I'm only making $20,000 because if you're making $200 a week and you don't give 20 bucks, you're not going to give $2,000 when you make an exponentially larger sum of money. So you're exactly right. If you don't do it now, you won't do it later. So do it with whatever you have.
Right.
And even if it's just a matter of all you have is I can sit down next to this person on a park bench who looks like they're sad and talk to them for a few minutes. If that's all you can do, that's the most important thing that person will probably have happen to them all day.
Right. Absolutely. Well, a lot of great takeaways. Thank you so much for sharing that. I just have a few more questions before we go. One of the sections I like to talk about are the employees in our businesses. And I would love to know, with your business, do you have a large team, small team? Share with us a little bit about who you have working with you.
We have a small team, and it ebbs and flows in size depending on what projects we're working on. I think that's one of the great things about the kind of economy and environment that we work in now, because you know, it used to be that if you had a team of 100 people, you had them on salary, on a payroll, and you had benefits, and you had to find work to keep them busy, or it became a burden on your company's bottom line. You know, maybe it got you into trouble. Now, because of the internet, people can work from anywhere for anyone. They can have their own business, even if they're a service provider. Transcriptionists are a great example. There's plenty of work. If you're a good transcriptionist, you can work as much or as little as you want to. And so we have a core team of about 5 people. And then outside that, we have a lot of different contractors that we use. So there's probably, all told with everybody that we work with, there's anywhere from 15 to 20 different people that we work with at any given time. But the core is just 5 of us. And we like to keep it lean and mean. Well, mean's not really the right word. Mean and mean goes together, but lean and nice. I'll say it that way. It's the beautiful thing about the way the world works today, because of the digital freedom that we all have, you can build a very substantial business with a very small team. I know a number of my closest friends have $1 million or multi-million dollar businesses, and they have a team of 5 people or less that run that business. And that's because of technology. That's the beauty of the age that we live in. We hear lots of complaints from people about how, smartphones and computers and the internet are taking people away from contact with other human beings. But it doesn't always have to be that way. If you look for the other side of that picture, you realize how liberating and freeing those tools can be and how much benefit they can bring to you, to your team, to your customers, and to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I like that, looking for the positive in all of the technology and things like that. And I think people get impressed when they hear really large team numbers and employees, but it doesn't have to be like that anymore. I'm so glad that you're saying you do have a small team, because if you can get that done with 5 people and outsource the rest, you're saving yourself so much time and money and just everything, especially when you're talking about delegation and trying to keep everybody accountable.
Well, so I love that. And it's not about being tight with money either. It's just about being a good steward of it. I mean, there's no, I know of several businesses here locally that have large staff, and it comes with a large overhead. And there's a lot of people on those different staffs that I'm thinking of that they have to find busy work because they just don't have something to do. And that's really, in my mind, that's an old post-industrial kind of model of how to do business. And it's becoming less and less common. And what's becoming more and more common are these distributed remote working teams like we have. Like, the only members of my team that work in the same city that I work in are the members that are my family, my wife and my son. Everybody else is somewhere else. And that is, again, that's a kind of freedom that we never had available to us before.
Right. Absolutely. Especially with all of the virtual assistants and the freelancing websites that you were talking about. There's so many options out there. Well, just 2 more questions before we go. What do you enjoy most about being an entrepreneur?
Oh, it's easy. The freedom, the ability to make my own decisions about where I want to go next, what I want to work on, who I want to work with, when I want to work. I love the freedom. And of course, as you get more people involved, there's a little bit less of that freedom because, when it was just me, I could do anything I wanted whenever I wanted. And that has its ups and its downs. And so now because we do have that team, that small team, I discuss these decisions with other people on the team first, and it makes me a better entrepreneur and it makes us a better company. But for sure, the thing I enjoy most is the freedom.
Great. And if you could share just one solid piece of advice with an entrepreneur who was maybe going through a tough time or thinking about, is this really worth it? What am I doing? What would you share with them?
Fill your head with positive, encouraging messages and information, and starve yourself of negative, discouraging information. That's the first piece of advice. So in other words, don't watch the news. Don't watch the presidential debates. Don't listen to what most people have to say about the economy or about being in business, because you ask anybody, they'll be ready to tell you, oh, I wouldn't be in business. It's tough. It's a tough economy. I've seen so many people go broke. How can you live that way? I like to have a regular paycheck coming in. Those are not the messages you need to hear. So you want to be sure that you're getting positive, encouraging messages from people who understand what you're doing, what you're going through. And then I would say, make sure that you get plenty of physical exercise. And I've never been the world's biggest athlete up until recently. I was just not athletically inclined. And then I realized that was costing me, because if you are in a state where you're feeling weary or run down or out of energy, or if you have a tough time in your business, especially if you feel depressed, the quickest way to get out of that is to go take a good run or a brisk walk, break a sweat for 30 minutes, and I promise you, you will feel better, because interestingly enough, your body is designed to respond that way.
Yeah, and it's great just to clear your head, and then the all the statistics on what working out does for not just your body, but your brain and everything else. Absolutely. I'm glad that you brought that up. Well, Ray, thank you so much. This has been truly an amazing experience with you. Where can my listeners find more information about you?
It's pretty simple. Just go to rayedwards.com. That's rayedwards.com. And that's my website. It's my blog. I have my free podcast available there. We have lots of free resources, and any other programs or opportunities to work together that come up will be announced there. So that's the one place to get in contact with me.
Okay, great. I will make sure to put all of that in the show notes for our listeners as well. Again, Ray, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. Truly have enjoyed this time together.
Well, thank you, Stacey. It's been my privilege and my pleasure.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Business Rescue Roadmap. Be sure to visit StaceyTushel.com for more free content, videos, and online courses like the Get Focused Academy that helps you let go of distractions and take the action necessary to achieve your dreams. We look forward to helping you save your business and rescue your life here on the Business Rescue Roadmap.